Morning, 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 beautiful peeps, and welcome to Owning It with Iola. I am your girl, Iola, of course, and I might sound a little bit different today because I've been suffering with a cold, well, actually a flu for the past week, and I just don't get colds or flus. I just don't know where this has come from. I'm going to blame it on the snow of last week, even though I definitely wasn't out on it, and I think this sort of happened beforehand. But anyway, I'm going to blame it on the snow because I'm not a fan. Yes, it's pretty. Anyway, let me not get into that because it's now dissipated, finally. And yeah, we are enjoying a brand new week. The weather seems to be a little bit milder, hopefully, so we'll see. But in good news, we have another amazing, amazing guest. Her name is Lekia Lee, and she is the founder of a company called Project Embrace. So she's a former broadcast journalist who in 2010, inspired by her then 5-year-old daughter, founded Project Embrace to encourage young girls to embrace their natural hair and feel confident in their authentic beauty. This led to the launch of the hashtag AfroVisibility billboard campaign in 2017, which I'm sure you guys have seen, which started with 2 billboards in London and grew to a few hundred throughout the UK. And today, the Project Embrace brand stands as an award-winning organisation, helping to change the narrative around African features, challenge anti-blackness in general, and encourage a more positive language for girls of African descent to associate their identity and looks with beauty, as it should be. So today, Lekia's come on to share with us about her new campaign, which is actually needing your guys' help. We need you guys. She's talking about the curvy survey, but before that, we'll be talking about her journey to embracing her natural beauty and all the bits in between. So stay tuned. You will be inspired. Lekia is absolutely amazing and a great person to talk to. Very knowledgeable and very passionate. So let's hear how Lekia is totally owning it. Welcome to the show, Owning It with Iola, and today we are owning it with Lekia Lee. Lekia is no stranger to myself. I've been following your work for many, many years. But firstly, we'll talk about all of that good stuff. But how are you, Lekia? How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm fine, thank you. Just thank you so much for having me. I am really fascinated to be on the show. Yes, like you said, we've known each other for years, so it's just like meeting up with a friend.
Yeah, we're going to have a little chat and just share with the world, you know, those who are listening in, exactly what you do in case they don't know. You know, they should have seen by now because you have been literally on billboards, quite literally all over the UK. But we'll get into that. But just tell us a little bit about, you know, so you're from, your company's called Project Embrace, yes. As I've read in my intro, as you guys would have heard. But with regards to your personal hair journey, can you share with us a little bit about your personal hair journey growing up?
Yes. Well, oh gosh, where do I start? You know, I know that we have a short time frame and it's a long story.
Go for it.
But I would say my hair journey started significantly when I decided I was going to learn to embrace myself. So anyway, before that, I realized that I had, my self-worth was tied very much to what I, you know, what I achieve. And I know that is very, you know, typical, especially for women, because women in society, we're given very little slack for making mistakes or not doing things well. You know, say, for example, you know, a single mother is like, ooh, you know, society vilifies her. But a single dad gets all the sympathy and support.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just using that as an example. So what happened was that, you know, so I worked so I was born in the UK, but raised in Nigeria. So I worked in Nigeria in the media for about 5-6 years before I came to the UK, because I wanted to, you know, explore working in the UK and also continue my education. Mm-hmm. And I found that the transitioning from working in the media in Nigeria to working in the media here wasn't going to be as straightforward as I expected, even though I knew I was going to face some sort of, you know, let's say what it is, racism, because I had experienced it as a child, so I knew that it existed. But for some reason, you know, being away from the country for so long, not having to experience anyone questioning your intelligence or your integrity just because of the way that you look. So I kind of like felt, nah, you know, as an adult, things would be different, that this is what children do and not what adults do. But I found out that actually, no, it's not the case. It's as painful, as insidious, as in your face, as what children do as well. So I faced a lot of disappointment, and that hadn't to do with anything other than the fact of how I looked and how I sounded, and which I had been told, because again, you know, through gaslighting, people say, well, are you sure, you know, but you know you're doing work, and people's like, oh my god, I didn't know you could do this. And I'm like, yes, I told you, I've got 6 years experience already, you know. When I was studying, like, oh, Lekki, you're really good at this. I was like, yes, you've forgotten, but I told you I have had, you know, experience with this. But because experience is not in a country or from a region that has the respect, so it doesn't really register. With all of those, so I've got a lot of disappointments and things like, you know, people being promoted over you, or people that you even train being promoted over you. There was just so much disappointment. So I did, you know, succumb to depression, and I was, you know, really depressed, even though I didn't really call it that at the time, for about 2 years. And so at one point I thought, you know what, I can't continue with this. So I spoke to a therapist, a Black woman, and she made me understand how some of my self-talk was keeping me keeping me depressed, but also where my self-talk was informed. So you know, from things that I've heard about, you know, about myself, people have said, and generally about how Black women are seen. And, you know, you internalize some of these things and, you know, you repeat it to yourself. So that's when I thought, oh, okay. So the thing that I need to do now is love myself for who I am and everything that makes me me. And that's my Africanness, my Blackness. And I said, well, if I'm going to do that, there's no way I can keep changing and contorting my hair to be other people's standards, because for me that was kind of like self-hypocritical, you know, like so that was when I decided to embrace my hair. And it wasn't an easy journey, because I wasn't used to seeing myself in that kind of way, or seeing myself as beautiful or even acceptable with my natural hair. So
how was your hair at that time then, up until that point? Did you wear your hair?
My hair was I went through all the different things, and you know, jerry curled my hair, obviously relaxed it, you know, relax was the main one, and then I had won the very early stages of weaves as well. I wore that, but my hair was mainly relaxed most of the time, because unlike some women, my hair was still very quite full, even though it was relaxed. Obviously not as full as it could be, but, you know, in the relaxed way. And I use the word relaxed just because it's something that we're used to, but because I don't really like saying relaxed these days, because, you know, the hair wasn't relaxed. It was just weakened, you know. The word to use is weakened. But anyway. So in that weakened state, it still, you know, had body. And, you know, I remember one hairdresser saying, oh, when I did the fringe, oh, let's trim your fringe a bit. I was like, no, I like it that way, you know. So anyway, that's how my hair was, really. So when I decided to, I had to cut it really short, you know, I cut everything off, you know, because one of those situations where I was really angry with myself, and I was like, I'm not carrying this perception of white supremacy on my head anymore. This is what I was saying to myself, you know. I felt like I betrayed myself, I betrayed my people, you know. And so I went to the barber, and the barber refused to cut my hair because he said my hair was long. I was like, no, cut my hair, please. He said, okay, could I sign something? Because lots of women come and say, cut my hair. And then in the end, you know, they're upset and they're crying. I'm like, no. This woman is ready.
But isn't that interesting, though? He was like, no, because you have long hair.
Yes.
That speaks to also the notion that so many of us have been brought up with, like, your hair is your beauty, and length is your, you know, the beauty standard, you know, across... you know, African Caribbean communities. If you've got in Jamaica, they say if you've got tall hair, you're beautiful. you know, meaning long hair. Yeah. And so you had to basically sign a disclaimer.
Yeah, he said I should. I felt he was joking. He was not joking. Because I was like, no, he said, no, sign it because I know what my experience is, you know. Mm. And we got into a little friendly argument about that. But in the end, I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it, you know. And yeah, like, okay, fine. And then I'm ready to cut your hair. Whatever you say, then that's your business. And so, yes, there's that idea that as a woman, you know, the idea of femininity is about having long hair, a long straight hair. And it's not an idea. I keep, you know, I generally say that it's not an idea that we are born with, because we are taught that. And yes, if you go back, you know, as far back in history, when especially when it comes to the history of people of African descent, it wasn't always that way, you know, or, you know, it was more to do with maybe the fullness of it, or even the different styles that you can create with it. Yes, some African societies where the women, short hair is the way to go, you know, till today. So it's not something that some people might think, because it's so much embedded in society today, we think it's almost inherent. But from my observation, I don't think it's something that is inherent. It's something that is taught, which is what most of culture is anyway. It's something that is taught. But when it's been going on for so many centuries, then it's easy to look at it and think that, okay, that's just something that is genetic, you know, is the way that we think, you know. Because there's some cultures too that is the man with long hair,
that's right.
And even in British white British culture, there was a time when men had to, you know, the gentry and the royalty and people of high society, they wore big wigs and long to show their masculinity. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Oh, for their masculinity. Oh, right. Okay, I didn't know.
Just about their masculinity and the so-called masculinity. Yeah, so people would spend as much as in today's money, like £400 in today's money for their wigs. Right. You know, and these are men. So yeah, so I mean, if you look at the pictures of judges and lords and all of that, that wasn't their natural hair; it was wigs. Okay,
of course, they were rocking those wigs back then too.
Like you said, there's that idea that women, you know, so it's long and straight hair, and then that's why the barber was a little bit, you know, hesitant.
Yeah. How was that for you, like, in terms of, I mean, I don't know if the natural hair movement, if you like, had started then at that time when you decided to do what would be now known as the big chop. So how was that for you? Because I imagine that was probably before all this kind of natural hair movement, was it?
Yes, it was before, because this was in 2000 when I had my hair basically shaved. So, yes, there wasn't, you know, any YouTube videos. It certainly wasn't Facebook or, you know, Academy, any of the social media available at the time. It was just me coming to realization, you know, almost like a light bulb moment, like, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to learn to love myself. And, you know, learning to love yourself from that position is stages. It takes time. I would say I'm still on that journey. Another 20 years later, I'm still on that journey. Oh, no, actually, it's 22 years later. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Time flies.
I'm still on that journey, you know, from the young Lekia who was like, you know what, you know, young adult, I want to do things right, I want to love myself, till now. Because as you get older, your body's changing, your hair is changing, you know. You have to have that foundation that no matter which direction is going, you still love yourself as you are.
So
there was nothing. A bit later, though, actually, there was one lady that was an inspiration to me, just one lady. Her name is Wendy Douglas. I will never forget. She was a presenter on, I think, ITV, and she had locks. She was the only Black woman in the media that I knew that had locks and was not, wasn't the stereotypical, like, the people imagine maybe she's Rastafarian or something. She's just a TV presenter. And I don't know where she is today, but yes, she was the one woman that I kept holding on to when I thought of growing out my hair. And then a bit later, you know, people like Jill Scott and India Irie, you know, yes. and listen to their music and see their images, and I'm like, especially Jill Scott's first album, I'm like, yes. There's someone out there who understands what, you know,
yeah,
and the assignments, as we'll say these days, you know.
But how does that for you, like being in, you know, the sort of corporate space, in sort of the behind the scenes of media, where generally there was this perception that was being put out there by said media of what is beautiful, and usually it was kind of straight haired, do you know what I mean, relaxed haired or whatever, you know, the term would be now, in terms of you're now transitioning, where you've cut all your hair off and you're now empowering yourself on this new journey. How was that for you sort of in the workspace? Was that, did people sort of support you in that, or was it not made a big deal, or how was that for you?
Interesting, because at the time when I had my hair cut, I wasn't working, even though I was looking to work in the media, because I was working in a more government organization. Mm-hmm. And but I was doing freelancing for radio.
Okay.
So they just, people would always comment, but black and white people would always comment or always say something. It was a mixture, but mm-hmm. Mostly the negative were actually from black people or black women. Mm-hmm. But I think because they felt they had the almost like the agency to be able to say certain things to me. Maybe if a white person may have thought it, but may not have said it, but a black person will say things like, why is your hair like this? You know, or do something about it. And right. I remember traveling once to Nigeria and to visit a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And one of her friends said to me, says, okay, we know you're coming from the UK, so it can't be that you don't have money. So why is your hair this way?
Oh.
Enough to say that it's only poor people that have their hair this way, you know.
Wow.
It's a very long conversation, but yeah, so the part of me actually enjoyed the attention, because it always gave me opportunity to fight my cause, you know. I remember while I was working, actually I worked in the job center, so while I was working before I got my first proper radio job, mm-hmm. One of the ladies, the white lady, said, you know, she was like, Lekki, I'm sorry, I really want to ask. I said, yeah, go ahead. They said, it's about your hair. I said, yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And she said, sometimes your hair is short, and then other times it's long, and then it's short again. So I know you're not cutting it. How come? And I smiled. I said, oh, it's called shrinkage, you know. She's like, really, what? I said, yes, I could just wash my hair and leave it, and then it's short, and then I could stretch it out too. And, you know, and she was really fascinated, and we just talked a little bit about that. So sometimes I enjoyed, you know, talking about things like that, especially when people are polite
about it.
But also I've had situations where, so I had my hair up in a high bun, and this was in Kent, and a friend of mine, another black girl, we went into a local shop, And an elderly woman, she looked like she was maybe in her 70s or 80s, an elderly white woman walked up to me. She didn't look at my face, she was looking at my hair. And I actually thought she was gonna ask me something like, oh, where can I find this? Maybe thinking that I was working in the shop or something. And she just reached out, put her hand in my hair and and walked away. She didn't say anything. She didn't say hello. She didn't say anything to me. She didn't even give me eye contact. She just went, her eyes went straight to my hair. She put her hand in, just did, and walked away. And I stood there shocked. And my friend wanted to go after her and say something. And then I almost realized myself and held her back. I said, just leave her, just leave. She's like, no, Lekki.
Yeah.
I was like,
wow.
What just happened? Yeah, so it's been mixed, the reaction to my hair. But I think what really kept me was the reason why I didn't do it, because my hair was damaged or health. I did it because I felt I needed to do that, one, to save myself, mm-hmm. and two, in saving myself, I'm making a political statement. And I felt it was very important for me to make that statement. I didn't have a big platform or anything, but in my own small world, I felt it was really important for me to make that statement. And so anywhere I went to, I knew that people were thinking about my hair. And I wanted them to think that, so that they would think about why anything is wrong with my hair.
Yeah. Wow. And then fast forward on to, was it 2017? Or my, you know, if I got the date right. But in terms of,
well, 2017 was when we had the first billboard was up.
Right. But, so you started it before then. So I'm just saying you've always been making that political statement.
Yeah. Like
this isn't just something that started from Project Embrace. This is something that's been, I guess, throughout the course of your personal journey as well. Yeah. And I just wanted to start off from, just if you could just share a little bit behind the backstory for Project Embrace specifically when you started that.
Yeah, so Project Embrace really was started because of my daughter. You know, it's like, I've embraced my hair, I was fine, you know, I talk about it wherever, if anybody wanted to. But when my daughter was about 3 years old, I realized that somehow she was getting the idea that straight hair was more beautiful or worthy of praise or something. And that surprised me because I had actually taken steps to make sure she doesn't see it that way, that she makes sure that she also sees Afro-textured hair as beautiful as well. And so, you know, it was the books I bought for her, which was really difficult at the time. A good friend of mine actually sent me a few books from the States, because it was very difficult to find. This was in 2005. Very difficult to find books, or children's books where the protagonist was just had natural hair, or even books about natural hair. Yeah, and you know, the TV shows that she watched, you know, I love magazines, but I got rid of all the magazines, all the piles and piles of Ebony and Pride magazine, and you know, all the others. I got rid of them because I didn't feel that the imagery there was promoting Afro-textured hair in the way that I felt it needed to be promoted, so that she would get this idea that her hair is okay. And it's not just her hair, I wanted her to know herself as a Black young girl. She's fine, she don't need to be herself or anybody. And I felt it's important for her to have that, so that it wouldn't affect whatever she wanted to pursue in life, whatever she wanted to do in life. How she looked and how she presented wouldn't be a hindrance. Because that's the way it was for me. So but what I realized, even with everything that I've done, she will see women, you know, whether we go to the library or the bus stop or wherever, and she'll say, "Oh, I love your hair." And when a little three-year-old is telling you that, it's like, "Oh, that's so nice." But I realized she only said it to women who had straight hair, Black women who had straight hair. She never said it to women who had hair like mine or hers. And I thought, well, is it because she wasn't seeing them, as not physically seeing them, or
psychologically for her, maybe?
Yeah, or psychologically, she wasn't seeing them, so that she would see them, but it wouldn't register to her.
Right.
So, you know, so I thought, you know, I needed to do something. And then that's when the idea came that I should, you know, a big billboard, big images that you cannot escape, you know, with our natural hair. And yeah, and that was about 2011. Little did I know.
2011, wow. Okay.
To put on a billboard would take, it was so much more. So in the meantime, I just, you know, had a Facebook page to start with, and then an Instagram page, and, you know, just sharing content there. That's how I started, until finally we were able to have our open auditions in 2016 and the first billboard in 2017, which was donated. All the billboard spaces have always been donated to us.
Yes. Yeah. No, and it was a fantastic. What was the, remind us of the hashtag for that?
The hashtag, yes, Afrovisibility.
Afrovisibility.
Yes. So each year we have different themes. So it's
Afrovisibility. Yeah.
Whatever. So the last one was Afrovisibility in STEM, because I wanted to also encourage Black girls that, you know, they can enter into the world of science, technology, engineering, and maths. It's not just something for men, you know. and that sort of thing. And the certain events that happened that led me to doing that as well. And I just wanted to show that there are Black women with their natural hair making a difference in the STEM world. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Powerful, powerful, powerful. I just wanted to go back about 8 years ago. I saw that there was a video on YouTube of you doing your own experiment. Now, we've heard, many of us have heard about the doll test, the famous doll test with the, you know, the black doll, the white doll, and the children picking which one they thought was beautiful.
Yeah.
And you conducted your own test with some images of three women and then also three girls, images of three girls and three images of three women with different textured hair. And then there was a white woman as well. It was such a powerful experiment that to see.
You did your research.
Oh, yes, girl. Yes. Well,
I always keep forgetting to bring up that video. I would really want to do a wider one, you know, the same way. But yeah, that was just a test to do, because after seeing the doll test, it just inspired me that, you know, I should do something similar with hair. And it turns out that yes, you know, kids or black kids were looking at, you know, the image with the white woman and the women basically with straight hair as the beautiful one, as the one they want to aspire to, and then the one with the afro textured hair and the girl and a woman with afro textured hair hardly got picked, you know, as one that they aspire to. But just like in the doll test, when I say which one has a hair like yours, and they hesitate a bit.
Yeah.
Protected one. I think at that point they're realizing that actually all this while I've been pointing to the other one when it comes to, you know, which one do you think is beautiful, which hair would you like to have, which one is, you know, intelligent and all that. But when it comes to which hair is like yours, they hesitate and, you know, point to that. So
that was very powerful.
Yeah, and that is really sometimes, because I won't lie, sometimes, you know, do it with Project Embrace, it almost feels like a thankless job, and it feels like, you know, you're not getting anywhere. But when I remember situations like that, you know, like the little experiment that we do, what I see in everyday life, you know, I witnessed an autistic 4-year-old girl having her hair relaxed once, and the way she was crying, they had to hold her down, like three other people in the salon had to hold her down, because I had issues with my wrist, and so I couldn't wash my hair myself. So I went for them to just wash it and put it in cornrows, which again was a problem, because the woman was like, oh no, I have got to straighten your hair first before I can cornrow it. I was like, no, you can cornrow it.
In a black Afro hair salon.
Yes, in a black Afro hair salon. Autistic children sometimes can be even hypersensitive, even more sensitive than the rest of us, and we know how those relaxers feel. And she was crying her life. Oh, I don't know, it's so painful even to recall. And so two other women had to hold her down, including her mom, while the hairdresser put the relaxer on. And I said to mom, I said, why are you doing this to her? She's like, oh, her hair is so difficult to manage, I can't comb it. I'm like, there are ways that you can do it. Or you cut the hair. She's a child. She doesn't care.
Yeah.
But no, she wanted her child, because her child had quite long, thick, beautiful hair. She wanted her to have long hair by all means. And, you know, so when I remember things like that, I just feel, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. And just going back on the experiment with the children, do you feel like, and you just mentioned about this young girl, do you feel that children's opinions differ quite vastly from that of adults? Because obviously when you're younger, it's kind of, you're just learning about what beauty is, and obviously as you get older, you're influenced by society. Do you feel that in your opinion and what you've seen, do they differ quite drastically or no?
I would say no, because you know, people normally say beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So I'll say, which to an extent is true, but who trained the eye of the beholder? Beauty is in the eye of the trainer, really.
Yeah.
And we are trained to see beauty from very early age in a particular way. It's really fascinating and amazing to how early children get idea of what is acceptable, what is beautiful. Also, depending on the environment, you know, it could even happen as early as two, because as early as three, especially if children have start going to nursery and start socializing, they already mm-hmm. have the idea. I've had a few women, you know, in the workshops that we deliver, say that, you know, their children as young as three coming back from nursery and say they don't like their hair. They want their hair to be like their white counterparts.
Yes.
So yeah. 3 years old. So you think, is the white child feeling the same way as the black child? No, because already before the child even interacts with other white children, they're already from the TV programs that they're watching, from when they're, you know, from before they could even speak, all mm-hmm. showing what goodness and niceness is all about. And it's just one particular image that they see. So when they go into society, into wider society, when they see that image as, you know, in an actual person, they want to be like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And that image is someone that has a lighter skin than theirs and has straighter hair. So they want that because they want the attributes to it. So it happens as early as three. So by the time a child is seven, and if none of that is addressed or interrupted, by the time a child is seven or eight, that's the idea of what they see as beauty. And you can see children when they're posing, you know, at seven, you know, you think, where did they get the idea? It's everything that they see, everything that is told to them, both directly and indirectly. So sometimes it could look as if, oh, but this is what the child wants, you know. The child wants, you know, long hair, wants this color, but it's just how they have been socialized to see beauty. And that socialization starts from the moment that they're born, literally from the moment they're born. By the time the child starts to see and then can start to, you know, long before they can speak even, they already have certain ideas of what is good, what is favorable. So yeah, so in that sense, the ideas do not differ as such, because we get these ideas so early in life. It's almost difficult to say, you know, what you would think, you know, because we're blank canvases anyway when we are born. So
yes,
just like they say, racism is not inherent. You don't
it's taught.
Yes, it's taught. You're not born to think that way.
No.
It's taught, but it's taught so early. And I think we probably still don't understand how susceptible children's brains are and how complex and wonderful and magical children's brains are. I don't know, but my thinking is that it's probably even much more complex and able to do much more than we even realize.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So coming on to the adults now, one way in which you are, you know, you've done the billboards, you do workshops, as you mentioned, you do events, and now you've just launched this new campaign, which is a survey. Tell us a little bit about that and why it's important for those who might be thinking, it's just hair. Like, why do I need, why the big fuss? Why do I need to complete this survey? Why do we need this?
Yeah, I know. I've heard that it's just hair so many times. Firstly, hair is very, very powerful. You know, it's like what you call soft power. And that's for every culture. It's not just among Black people or Caucasians. Hair is a language in itself. It can be used to empower people, it can be used to oppress people. You know, you just think back to, say, back in the days where, you know, prisoners will have their hair cut, you know, back obviously to slavery, when, you know, the slavers or enslavers would shave off the hair of the women, you know. And some people say, oh, it's for hygienic purposes. Yes, one, but also because it was a way of dehumanizing them, you know. In Asia, there was a time when men growing their hair, I'm trying to remember the era, I can't remember at the top of my head now, where it was a way to show your alignment to a particular dynasty for having the long, I think they call them queues, you know, where they just have this, you know, all yes. the rest of the hair shaven and they just have that long
yes.
little bit behind, you know. Mm-hmm. It's all different ways, you know. I mean, we've said it so many times within the people of African descent, you know, how we've used hair to differentiate, you know, marital status, you know, age and so many different things. So hair is powerful and hair is important. And anyone that says, oh, it's just hair, I dare them to go and shave their head, especially as a woman, if you think it's just hair. All the money you spend on it, you know, the time we spend on it, it's never just mm-hmm. hair. But anyway, so the survey is called the Curvy Hair Survey, and curvy hair because our hair curves, you know.
Okay.
So it's Curvy Hair Survey, and it's basically what we want to do is to collect stories. We want to collect as many stories as possible about our hair and our experiences as women in this society in the UK. And it's important because telling stories is important. If we keep things to ourselves, you know, it has a way of showing up in ways that may not be say good for our health, for example. But it's also because we hear, you know, one or two stories of discrimination here and there, and it might seem like, oh, it's just happening to that person or not happening to that many people. And I bet there's many of us who listen to these stories or hear these stories, like, you know, there's a story of a young lady, I can't remember when, I think this was probably 2000 and let me not say, but anyway, there's a story about, I think anyone can Google it, there's a story about a lady that was told that she cannot have her braids if she wanted to work for Harrods, for example. Or the young right. girl Ruby Turner, who was told that her hair was a distraction, and you know, but they, you know, by her school. And we've got, you know, we hear stories, and I just think, how many of us can relate to that, or say, ah, that happened to me, or that happened to my sister or my cousin, or you know, whoever, or a friend. But we're not hearing them. We don't know the numbers. So I think it's important to know the numbers so we know how widespread hair bias and the resultant hair discrimination is. Because if we know, then we know that, oh, there's so many people who are biased against our hair, and then we can do something about it. We can be better equipped to help to eradicate this. We've been talking about this for decades and centuries.
Yes.
We don't want it to be a situation that in another decade we are still having to experience hair discrimination. We are still having to try and conform to policies that are not taking into account our own physical features. So it's important that we have enough data to be able to change policies, to lobby enough to change policies. Because if you just hear about one story, two stories, people are okay, but you know, the numbers may not be
enough
to warrant any sort of, you know, attention. Yes. But I just have a suspicion that they are. And maybe we might find out that maybe it's not as widespread as we think. And so, hey, the society is moving in the direction that we want it to move, i.e. that is the direction of, you know, being more diverse, being more inclusive. But if it's not, it's good for us to know. And so that fill out the survey, you know, the better they are in helping us to, you know, fight this level of racism, because it is based on racial racial definitions. That's not what I wanted to say, but you know, I mean, you know, racial hierarchy, that sort of thinking, because racial thinking, racism is a habit of thinking. You think in a certain kind of way, especially when it comes to how people look. And even though we say don't judge the book by the cover, we all do it. We all do it. I mean, we even take pleasure in designing our cover. I mean, I will tell you about my hair. Like, you know, we postponed the interview. And I was like, oh, but I've done my hair for the interview.
Yeah.
So we know that our cover is important. It doesn't tell the whole story. Right. Just like the cover of a book would never tell you the whole story, but it would give you an idea of what you're looking for. So say you want to buy a book for your 9-year-old niece, you're going to look at the covers first and then look at the blurb behind, you know, for example. So I just use 9-year-old niece because I have one and I need to buy her a book. But it's the same thing with human beings, you know, the way we present ourselves, you know, it's telling a story, but not the whole story. So we want to be able to tell our story of who we are by the way we present ourselves. And we don't want anyone to tell us, no, you can't do this or you can't do that. You can't paint your book cover this way if you want to, or you can't paint it that way. Or the only way for you to paint your book cover so we know that something is valuable inside is for you to do it this way or that way. No, we want to be able to tell our own stories. So the more people fill out the survey, the stronger we become in being able to change the narrative around our hair and also by extension around our own beauty. It's a way of reclaiming our beauty, I believe. I want to employ as many women as possible to fill out the curvy hair survey, and they'll be in a chance to win some nice goodies from our supporters. We have three brands supporting us. Ori by Titi is one of the brands supporting us. Born Beautiful Naturals is one of the brands supporting us. And Pantene Gold Series.
Fantastic. So each survey completed is an entry into the chance to win.
Yes.
And what is open for? And like, is there a deadline for it, presumably?
The survey is going to be open till March. Next year. But don't delay, just
go. No, of course.
Yeah. Also, there'll be for a chance to be featured on our billboard as well. So normally we have an open audition, and you know, we choose women based on their story, not really based on the looks, because I believe that every look is beautiful and every look has deserves to be on, you know, a platform like a billboard. We would choose one. We would select one person from the survey who would not have to go through that process. Given is it gold cross or gold? You know, in the competitions. What's it called again? Is it The Voice? No, not The Voice. Oh God, this shows you I don't really watch a lot of TV.
And I don't either. But they get
that's
gold.
Why you're looking at me like,
no, I know what you mean on the show, and it's like
I think it's like
a gold. Yeah, and it's like a gold.
So that sort of thing.
Basically, they go straight through, and you get a gold star, and you go straight through, basically.
And we don't want a situation when people, you know, when the results come out, people are like, oh, I didn't hear about that. Nobody asked me.
Exactly. Hence coming on and sharing it with us. So thank you. So for those of you listening, you know, no matter what your hair story is, Lekia and the team at Project Embrace want to hear from you. So make sure that you go and check that out. Where can they access this? And I know that I've seen it on your Instagram, on Project Embrace Instagram, but is that the best place for them to go, or where can they access it?
Yeah, that's the best place for them to go. They can also, on LinkedIn too, you can access it on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Just go at Project Embrace UK. It should be on our website by now.
Okay.
I need to just double check with the website guy, but it will be on the website anyway, at least before the end of the year.
It'll also be on my Instagram as well, at Owning It With Iola. So we'll be sharing it there as well, where you see Lekia's face. If you slide across, you'll also see the scanner, the QR code, where you can just put your phone on there, and then you can just takes you straight through, you know, this technology stuff takes you straight through to the survey, which is great.
It's a nice
easy survey. I've completed it myself, you know, and it's nice actually when you're kind of just trying to think about just a moment for yourself, just to kind of think about, you know, how do I feel about this, and recalling certain incidences, and you might not have thought much about them, but you know, they're actually important. And also just you connecting with your own feelings about your hair generally. You know, it's not just hair. And on that note, actually, I wanted to implore people to just go and check out your the Project Embrace Instagram anyway, because you've got some fantastic educational posts on there, Lekia. Recently, you posted about the history. You know, we were talking about it's not just hair. And you've got the history of the racist ads that demeaned black hair and blackness in general over the span of the last 100 years. Now, obviously, we know that we're seeing more diversity in sort of the media and ads. I don't really watch TV per se, but I've seen, you know, on YouTube ads and things that there are definitely more, you know, black, Asian, you know, and mixed heritage people on screens nowadays. But do you feel like that's enough to kind of change the opinions of those and those policies in the workplace, or do you still feel like there's it's not having that impact, it's just kind of optics?
No, it's not enough is the short answer. Because as we said, it's hundreds of years of the same sort of it's propaganda, you know, over and over and over, centuries and centuries and centuries, you know, passed down to the next generation and the next generation. And they just find different ways of, you know, just propagating the same thing. So they wouldn't use probably the N-word or wouldn't say certain things. But in a way, you still see that sort of thinking played out, but more in a more modern way, so to speak. So, yes, I mean it's helpful that we do see more black women in adverts and black women with their natural hair in adverts, which is it's even in the last, should I say, 5, 6, 7 years, it's really grown exponentially, which is really good. Yeah. But for any change in the habit, which the way we see things is a habit, as I said, racism is a habit, is a way of thinking that we have become used to. It takes more than just one or two anecdotal, you know, adverts here and there. The idea that to look professional, especially for a black woman, you still have to conform to European beauty standards. Your hair should be straight. Or obviously, you know, changing the skin is not that simple. So, you know, who knows, if we could change our skin color the way we change our hair, what would it be, you know? So anyway, let's not go down that road.
I know that obviously we kind of come in towards the end, and not to interject, I just want to get from you very quickly before we have to wrap up. And I think that your whole work surmises this anyway, but from you personally, Lekia Lee, the founder of Project Embrace, what does owning it mean to you personally?
Owning it for me, oh wow. Owning it for me means defining who I am and standing by that definition. Being comfortable in my authentic self and taking responsibility for me. It's about reclaiming my beauty and reclaiming myself. And the reason why I say that is because as a black woman, or someone of an African descent, who I really am who I really am has been taken away from me through all these myths propagated about African intellectualism, African culture, African the way that African physical features are shown to be inferior. I've believed the lie for so long, I've believed the myth. So owning it for me now means me redefining myself, reclaiming who I am, and standing by it and taking responsibility for it.
Beautiful, powerful. I felt that, and you are totally owning it. You know, you're living, breathing testament of everything that you've just said. Thank you so much for the work you're doing, from my heart to yours. And on behalf of everybody that follows and supports your work. And on that note, please, people listening, please go and follow Project Embrace on all the social, particularly on Instagram, where you will also find the curvy survey, which we want you to fill out as soon as possible. Don't delay. Don't forget, you'll be able to get your chance to enter the to win a lovely gift as well, or maybe even be on the billboard. So that's a great incentive in itself. But Lekia, thank you so, so much for joining us and for owning it. And thank you so much.
So guys, that's the end of our interview with the fabulous Lekia Lee. I hope you enjoyed that. She's totally amazing. Absolutely love her energy. So please do go and check out Project Embrace, fill out the curvy survey, and you never know, we might see you on a billboard around the UK sometime next year. So you never know. But until then, stay locked to colourful and make sure that you have yourself an amazing, fabulous week. Stay blessed.